Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. When we learned journalist David Owen had written a new book about hearing, we knew we wanted to welcome him to In the Moment because your ability to hear us is incredibly important. His book is called Volume Control, Hearing in a Deafening World. Now, in South Dakota, our ears are basically the same as anywhere else, but our risks are slightly different. Farm equipment, hunting, and manufacturing can cause permanent damage even at an early age. Of course, we also have those quiet, starlit evenings to our advantage. The book is an in-depth, often surprising, and delightfully nerdy look at the human ear and all we do to destroy its function, as well as intricate human efforts to restore that function. David Owen is a staff writer for The New Yorker and the author of more than a dozen books, and he joins us now on the phone. Welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Let's start with why hearing is such a puzzle for scientists. It's one of those things that you would just think we would have figured out by now.
Yeah, it seems sort of easy. We ignore it. We don't pay attention to it. And yet, when I was talking with a scientist at Mass Eye and Ear in Boston, and there was a point when he was explaining how a certain part of the neural circuitry worked, when I thought, stop. If I learn any more, my ears are going to stop working. It's
right.
Like the tightrope walker who looks down and falls. It just seems so complicated. It's like, how does anybody hear anything at all? And that's a common reaction among people who work with hearing, scientists who study it. They say, the more you learn about it, the more you are amazed at this remarkable sense.
And you have officially answered the question about whether or not if a tree falls in the forest and no one is there to hear it, does it really make a sound? And the answer is, well, technically, no.
Yeah, right. The answer is no. And what we think of sound as something that happens in the world. Sound is something that happens in our head. Vibrations in the air make our eardrums vibrate, which make these little tiny, tiny bones vibrate, which pass the vibration into this tiny, tiny fluid-filled shell-shaped little BB-sized thing in our head. And there are neural sensors in there that convert that into electrical signals that send to our brain that we interpret as sound. But if there were no ears in the world, those vibrations would still exist, but the meaning that we give to them, that we call what we call sound, would not.
And this is partially connected to the idea of why the first time you hear your own voice played back to you, you always think, "Is that me?" Explain exactly what's happening in our brains and in our ears when we have that experience.
Yes, a big part of how we hear our own voices is through what's called bone conduction. This is where the sound comes not through the ear by way of the eardrum, but through the bones of the skull and directly into the inside parts of the ear, and that tends to sort of rinse out some of the higher frequencies. So our voice, as we hear it to ourselves, sounds lower and kind of richer than it does to other people. So when you hear it for the first time in a recording, you're like, wait, who is that? Who's that squawking there? It doesn't sound like my voice doesn't sound like what it sounds like inside my head.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
Yeah, and I also love all these details about the things that we don't hear, and it's probably a good thing that we don't. For example, what's happening with bats? And tell us a little bit about that, because it's so fascinating.
Well, bats hunt food with sound. They emit these sounds that we can't hear. They're at frequencies that are higher than human ears can hear, and they bounce off of targets, off moths, for example, and then come back to their ears. And the way that bats determine where the prey is by their brains interpret the return signals and how they come back. Those sounds that they make, if we could hear them, would be incredibly loud. So loud, like as though the bats were firing guns from their mouths. Mm-hmm. In fact, these sounds are so intense that the bats would deafen themselves if they didn't for a brief fraction of a second, disable their ears right before they make the sound until right after. They deafen themselves so that they can't hear it. Meanwhile, the targets of their echolocation sounds are moths flying through the air, and the belief is that moths developed hearing they evolved hearing to avoid bats. Mm-hmm. And so there's this kind of arms race between bats and moths where as moths have gotten better at hearing the sounds that come from bats. Bats have raised the frequency of the sounds that they make to push them into the range that moths can't hear. So there's this kind of what always happens in natural selection, where there's this sort of constant battle back and forth of trying to outwit the predator and prey in this constant arms race to outwit each other.
Now, we're broadcasting live in South Dakota, and there's plenty of noise here, but there's also plenty of quiet. And if I'm not at work, it's not too hard to go somewhere throughout our state and find some, you know, nice bird song and some nice peace and quiet. But our world in general is getting a lot noisier. Not for the first time, not insignificantly either.
No, it's definitely true, and it's you know, you're very lucky in South Dakota to have quiet places. But there's no place in the United States that is as quiet as it once was.
Right.
There's no place that's as dark as it once was. We don't think of these of light and sound as forms of pollution, but they are, and they impact not just our enjoyment of, you know, the natural world, but also many forms of wildlife, which, light pollution, sound, there are animals, predators that depend on sound to hunt. There are prey animals that depend on hearing to avoid predators. And as we raise the background volume, the level of sound in the background, it becomes harder for both of them to do that. And you actually see behavior changing. There was an interesting experiment done not too far from you in Idaho, where scientists created what they called a phantom road. They made a highway in a place that had never had a highway before. It was through forest in wilderness, and they did it by mounting loudspeakers high in trees and then just playing traffic noise. And it wasn't like city traffic noise. It was sound that they recorded in a national park. So it was cars going by, and then they recorded the impact that it had on migrating birds, and it was immense. It was huge. Some species declined by huge percentages. Species that changed, that appeared to be unaffected, actually they discovered that they were not gaining weight at the rate that they should have, given that they were about to migrate. So even it was a very clear demonstration of the impact that human generated sound has on, in this case, birds, but on wildlife of all kinds.
Why are we so casual with not only that, but with our own hearing? I've always had jobs where my hearing is really important, so I kind of am almost a little annoyingly protective of it. But most people, you know, will get to middle age and they've already done some damage. Why are we so cavalier?
You know, I think there are a lot of reasons. One is that the damage can take time for us to be aware of it.
Yeah.
People tend to think of hearing problems as problems of old people. And they are, but they're problems of old people that begin in young people. So it's the things that we do when we're young that accumulate over a lifetime or that take a while to emerge. And so I think there's enough time between when the problem starts and when we begin to feel that our lives are impacted that it's easy to put off thinking about it.
Yeah.
The other is that people just, for some reason, kind of take hearing for granted. And, when my friends and I, like a sleepover game that we used to play, was like, would you rather be, you know, guillotined or hanged, or frozen to death or burned, deaf or blind? And my choice was always deaf. You know, I wouldn't want to be blind. And yet, as I wrote this book, I changed my thinking on that. And it was Helen Keller was one of the reasons. And she said she was both deaf and blind from the time she was a toddler. And she said of the two, the far greater impact was from being deaf, because when you don't hear, you are isolated from other human beings. I noticed it for myself. My wife and I were at a picnic at the lake with a group of friends. We're sitting at a picnic table, beautiful night, sun going down, lake is beautiful, children playing in the water. I thought, God, what a beautiful evening. If I were blind, I wouldn't be able to see it, and I wouldn't be able to sneak looks at my phone under the table. But then I realized that if I were deaf, I wouldn't even be a minor participant in the evening, because the point of the evening wasn't to look at these things. It was talking with friends. And if I hadn't been able to hear them, I would have been a lump on the picnic table bench. And we see this in old people who They become socially isolated as their hearing declines. They become depressed. They're subject to illnesses that are entirely unrelated, seemingly, to hearing. Their life expectancy goes down. It's an important sense for how we relate to the world, and then just, you know, for our general well-being, and yet we take it for granted.
And this gets to one of the really important themes that runs throughout the book, is that, you know, people resist, you know, either wearing hearing aids because of the stigma attached, as you said, you know, it can be seen as an old person problem and therefore, you know, discarded, you know, as the elderly are sometimes discarded. It can be a point of pride. Talk about how many people in the military have hearing damage and do nothing to sort of, you know, preempt it at all. But it's exhausting, isn't it? Talk a little bit about just how fatiguing it can be to have to work to translate those conversations and sounds around you into meaningful context in your brain.
It's true. As we lose the ability to hear, we compensate in other ways. And a hearing researcher at a hearing aid company did a demonstration for several of us, which was, he said, even people who can hear perfectly get about 20% of their comprehension from unconscious lip reading. And he covered, and he said, simply by covering his mouth as he was talking to us with a piece of paper, he said he made it harder for us to hear what was saying. We also pick up a lot from context. And you can notice this in talking to people. If they suddenly throw in a non sequitur, suddenly change direction in an unanticipated way, you'll often go, what? What? And it's not because you weren't paying attention. It's because your brain was anticipating, with each spoken word, anticipating what the next word might be. And when it comes from out of nowhere, the brain has trouble with it. As we lose hearing, we have to use more and more of that brain power to compensate for this lost sense. And it can get to the point, it's exhausting. There's a fascinating book by a guy named Gerald Shea, who was deafened by illness in childhood, was really profoundly deaf throughout his life, but graduated from Exeter and from college, he was a partner at a big deal law firm, negotiated contracts in both French and English without realizing that he had very little hearing. And it was in his 30s when he was given a work-related hearing test, someone first told him, you are really deaf. And the reason, it seems amazing to people that he hadn't known that. But he thought he was so good at compensating, he had become so good at reading lips and at drawing deductions from context that he was able to get by. But at tremendous cost in terms of how exhausting it was for him to do things that people with perfect hearing do effortlessly.
That was the story in the book that gave me the moment that you had, like, if I think too much about my hearing, will it disappear? Right. As I was reading that story, because I do so much preparation for this show on a daily basis, that all I thought was, like, maybe I really have a hearing problem. And I'm, because I do so much research, I know pretty much the answer to the question before I ask it sometimes. And maybe I should get my hearing checked. And there was that moment of panic. You're like, no, you're fine. So once it's threatened, you pay attention. There's a lot of things in this book that you pay attention to that you didn't before, including that awful ringing in your ears that you have suffered from.
Yes, I have. It's called tinnitus, a kind of phantom sound in the head. It's not really a sound. So people will say, well, isn't there a noise-canceling headphone that will get rid of us? This goes, no, it's not a sound. It's just like electrical activity in your auditory circuit in your brain. And the thinking now is that as you lose the ability to hear certain frequencies, the brain kind of makes its best guess as to what a signal was that it used to receive all the time. And so there's this, I can hear this high-pitched tone in my head that's not a, nobody else can hear it. It's just the sound in my head. Unfortunately, there's no cure for it, at least so far. The usual advice that's given to people is that, learn to ignore it, and you kind of through learn not to pay attention to it, which I've been pretty good at until I started working on the book, because the worst thing you can do for tinnitus is to think about it, and when I'm writing about it, I'm doing nothing but thinking about it. So yeah. I notice it whenever I'm thinking about it, but most of the time not. But for some people, there are people who have committed suicide because they could not stand this phantom sound, and there are versions of it that are extraordinary. Where people, I interviewed one kid who has hearing problems, and he has a form of tinnitus that causes he will hear something. He would hear later something that I had said repeated constantly in his head.
Yeah.
Somebody who he'll hear music. Somebody who thought they were hearing the national anthem, someone who heard what he said sounded like male voices kind of distance, he felt like he could almost understand what they were saying. And needless to say, these are distracting effects. They're phantom effects, but they can have life-changing impacts on people who suffer from them.
From a hearing loss perspective, not being in denial can be incredibly important. From a tinnitus or tinnitus perspective, a little bit of benign neglect might not be a bad thing if you have a mild form of it. And you kind of explained, this is one of my favorite stories in the book, and it's because I just laughed out loud for like 5 minutes, which is being at the airport and having a delay, and then you seek out the most stressed out business traveler because you figure if I stand near him, he's going to figure it out, and if he can't...
Right, exactly. You find the type A personality in the group, and the one who'll be yelling at the people behind the desk, because if there's any solution, he'll be the one who will find out. And it's kind of outsourcing your aggravation to somebody whose whole deal is being aggravated all the time.
Yeah, I'm totally going
to
do that.
I have a friend like that who has hearing loss and tinnitus, and he has talked to just about every expert in the world. And so my thinking is, if there is a cure for this, he will hear about it before anybody else, and then he'll tell me. And so I'll just keep in touch with him and do my best to ignore it in the meantime.
I'm totally stealing that idea at the airport and in other places as well. This concept of noise pollution and just the world getting louder, is there any going back? What is the point, do you think, that people will start paying attention to noise pollution and say something needs to be done? Because we've seen that happen, as you outline the Industrial Revolution and occupational jobs where that advancements have been made. Can we make advancements as a society?
Yeah, we can, and there are some instances in which there are relatively simple solutions. There are kinds of police car sirens, fire engine sirens, where the sound is directed in a way so that it's only audible or only mainly audible to the people who need to hear it, so the people who are right in front of it. But if you're in a building next to that road, you can't hear it, or you can't hear it as well. One of the largest single source of wildlife damaging sound levels in the ocean is shipping. It's ships.
Yeah.
And you can isolate these enormous engines in ocean-going vessels from the hulls in a way that makes them much quieter. The Navy has actually worked a lot on reducing the damaging impacts of sonar. Sonar has, when we see beached whales dying on a beach, kind of, why are they there? Why did they all come ashore? And very often the cause has been human-generated sound under the water that has, in some cases, caused them to shoot to the surface, and they get the bends, something that I thought only happened to human divers. But these are all impacts from the technology that makes our lives as great as they are, but they have environmental impacts, and they're not always, I wrote about light pollution, I think about 15 years ago, and there were, environmentalists would say, it's light pollution is a soft issue. Well, it's not, because it has huge impacts on wildlife. You see insects flying around lights. After a year or so, you don't see as many flying around that light. It's not because they've learned to stay away. It's because insect populations have been drawn into this. That's like a vacuum cleaner, and this is one of the reasons that insect populations have declined all over the world. And the same is true underwater. We see even less. We have much less idea of the kind of damage that we're doing to marine mammals because we don't know how many there are to begin with, and we don't know what our impact is.
Well, it's a remarkable book. It's called Volume Control: Hearing in a Deafening World. Author David Owen joined us on the phone from Connecticut. Thank you so much for the book and for your time.
Oh, thank you.